Happy birthday, Bo Jackson, the greatest what if in sports history.
Yeah. Kevin, you want to weigh in with a, are you thinking another what if, or are you the thinking greatest, about?
Oh, you know, there are a lot of, you know, what ifs. The thing about Bo is we saw a lot of Bo. So what if more, but like Lynn Bias.
That was from a tweet that was put out from the ESPN account on the show Around the Horn, where during a commercial break or a stop down in taping, it was George Sedano and Kevin Blackstone and, I don't know, a couple of others who were on that show. And they were doing a what if.
What if Wednesday.
Keith, what if everyone at ESPN just listens to this show and does everything we do?
They just take snake us?
Oh, my God.
And topic snake us and whatever else you could possibly come up with.
However, I must say, when I heard the name Bo Jackson,
yeah,
I thought, oh,
perked up a little bit.
You and I might be able to have a little fun with that. Mm-hmm. We're in hour two. Gretchen Keefe here with you on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. For those of you who are watching us today on Twitch, WEEI.com/watch, you'll see that I'm here in the bowels of Gillette Stadium. The field is being prepped from a soccer field to a football field for high school state championship games. But it is also What If Wednesday. So let's get to our what ifs. And I know that we have a bunch with Shime, right? But because we heard the audio, is Bo Jackson the biggest what if in sports history? I don't know if I even buy that.
No, definitely not. No,
because like, whoever said
that, the guy was great. His career would have been a little bit better probably in both. Would have been awesome. But no, it's so much different. Because like, when we do the what ifs, we really get into like the butterfly effect of things. And I think, you know, one of the guys there at the end mentioned Len Bias, but you could talk about what if, you know, Michael Jordan doesn't fall to number three, right? Like if the Blazers don't draft Sam Bowie and they draft Michael Jordan, how that changes the entire landscape of the NBA for the entire 90s, the whole 90s in the NBA, and actually half of the 80s and the early 90s is completely different if he plays somewhere else. So I think there are bigger what ifs. I think the one we're going to get to, even sort of loosely, like if Drew Bledsoe doesn't get hurt, that's a better what if than Bo Jackson, because that means we might never have seen Tom Brady start a game for the Patriots.
All right, so let's turn it to Shime. Let's get into our What If Wednesday then.
Well,
Scrim, what do we have?
What if the Patriots chose Drew Bledsoe over Tom Brady?
Wow.
So after the Super Bowl in 01, I feel like it would have been nearly impossible to do so. But let's play it out. If they did, let me ask you, Gresh, do you think they keep Brady as a cheap backup, or because he just won the freaking Super Bowl, somebody would be willing to trade for him, and then he ends up playing somewhere else?
Yeah, I think Bill Belichick might have been lured by, oh, I don't know, a pick, a second, a first maybe, if he said, no, I'm gonna really lock down with Drew Bledsoe and then get rid of Tom Brady. Because what we've learned of Bill Belichick, and this is the hard part to kind of get out of your head, right? Like, it was almost as if Drew Bledsoe was a dead man walking when Belichick got there, because he had the $100 million contract attached to his name. But, first of all, I couldn't even imagine what life would be like around here if Tom Brady wasn't here for 20 years. So, it'd be Armageddon. Honestly, I mean, and I really mean this, I don't know if we'd be – I don't know if I'd be, like, sitting down here at Gillette Stadium in one of, like, two radio studios, because the team became so damn popular that they needed extra facilities and things like that. I think we really would be kind of the, like, morose, moribund, well, they won one championship type of feel versus a dynasty and the world, really, and America hating New England and the Patriots.
So Bledsoe went to Buffalo for 3 years. He had a record of 23-25. He made one other Pro Bowl. If Bledsoe was on the 03 or 04 team, do they win the Super Bowl those years?
No.
I agree. And I like Bledsoe.
I love him.
Right. And I wanted to defend him. Good quarterback. But, and as good as those defenses were in 03, 04, I don't think Bledsoe gets it done. So if they kept Bledsoe and moved on from Brady, I don't know, they might still be stuck on one Super Bowl.
I mean, but, you know, and then there, you mentioned the butterfly effect. Then there is the, you know, how would Brady have done in another organization.
It really depends on where he goes, doesn't it?
Well, there is that, but there's also the Tom Brady kind of sort of forced his way into not only this starting job, but took advantage of the opportunity that was afforded him. That might be the ultimate what if. And look, without and to you and I both sort of agree, it's like, oh, you love to defend Drew Bledsoe because I made the crack about Gillette Stadium, but this stadium doesn't get built if Drew Bledsoe isn't here.
Definitely. No, I mean, you needed somebody like that, like a true face of the franchise, a guy worthy of the number one overall pick. Absolutely.
What if the Patriots never released Lawyer Malloy?
Oh, boy. That's juicy because he went to the Bills, and it kind of worked out. He sort of just kind of had the rest of his career. Like, he went to Atlanta. He went to Seattle.
He was good. He was
a good
really
player.
Good. He had a really good career. I think if he stays, because you remember, it wasn't get rid of Lawyer Malloy, sign Rodney Harrison. It was sign Rodney Harrison, continue to negotiate with Lawyer Malloy. I think 6 months go by, and then cut Lawyer Malloy right before week one. If he was on those teams, so let's say he would have been on the 03 and the 04 Super Bowl team. I don't know how much longer he would have played, but if he's one of those guys that's more synonymous with, like, Ty Law, William McGinnis, Teddy Bruschi, like the guys that won Mike Vrabel, like multiple Super Bowls. I think he's not a Hall of Famer, but he's certainly viewed a lot higher than he even is today.
Yeah, I think with Lawyer, he was really a linebacker, especially in today's game. Like when you think about Lawyer Malloy, just in terms of, I mean, my critique of Malloy was always he tried to knock everybody out versus tackle people. And I think there were on some level that did drive Bill Belichick nuts. But that said, I really wonder if the defense would have been as good. And that's not an indictment on Lawyer Malloy, the player. It's more of an indictment on what the mix would have been on the back end. Because if you remember, it was Eugene Wilson, right, who came in and was more of the quote-unquote free safety.
Yeah.
So the Rodney could roam around and, you know, knock people's ding-dongs stiff, mm-hmm. which he was really good at, knocking people out and stuff like that.
They would have been the Legion of Boom if they had Lawyer Malloy and Rodney Harrison.
Maybe. Or would they have been the Legion of Missed Tackles because guys would have been out there throwing themselves like missiles, trying to shoulder block and flipper everybody and KO them.
Nah, I wonder. You'd have some big hits. That's true.
I just wonder about that mix. But Lawyer Malloy, another one of those guys like Drew Bledsoe, Keith, that we have to keep reminding ourselves, hey, he was here and he was really good.
He was, yeah.
What if the 76ers drafted Jason Tatum?
They must be thinking about this all the time because this was the old Danny Ainge finally gets the number one pick in the draft, and then he's like, actually, I'll trade down to 3 and still get the guy I want. And the Sixers are like, we'll take the number one pick, and we'll take Markelle Fultz. Who is, I guess, Anthony Bennett is worse, but of the last 20 years, Markelle Fultz has got to be the second worst number one pick, right?
I disagree in that. Markelle Fultz is by far the worst because they traded up to get the guy. I mean, Keith, think about it. You and I have sat here for 9 months now on the WEEI Sports Radio Network, and we've talked about trades, and you get into the not only the trades but the rumor mill and NBA players being babies and stuff like that. It is unfathomable to me that a general manager said, not only am I going to move up to the number one pick, I'm going to take a guy who's going to be out of the league in like 3 years. Like, there's the Anthony Bennett whiff, but to move up to do it, and then you miss on a guy like Tatum, where for as much as you and I have been hooting on him, and rightfully so as of late, and I'm sure we will a little bit later on, you're right. Like, I was thinking about this when we put this in the what if. Is that move for Markelle Fultz the worst move by a general manager in the history of sports?
No.
Again, you
worst in the history of sports?
Not only did you trade up,
yeah.
you leapt over one other team to get to the number one pick, and then arguably the best player to come out of that draft. Not only did he not go number two, he went number three. And then they took the guy, and Fultz had to be traded like a year and a half later. That is one of the worst ever.
Yeah, but again, Jason Tatum hasn't proven to be Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Michael Jordan, any of these guys yet. If he is, then it looks a lot worse. Right now, Jason Tatum is an all-star, and we've talked about it before. We're still waiting for him to kind of break through even more. He might be the best player in that draft class, although Donovan Mitchell was drafted 13. So, I mean, I guess that's still up for debate potentially. But anyway, Markelle Fultz, he's no longer on Philly. He's still in the league, though. He's hurt right now, but he's on the league, and he's playing a little bit better with Orlando than he was with Philly. That is a terrible decision, but as Shime just said in my ear, the Bears traded up to get Mitch Trubisky at 2 and drafted him ahead of Watson and Mahomes. So that's that is a pretty bad one.
That is pretty. I think it's the moving up to number one part of it. That's what almost automatically puts it on the list. Do you remember off the top of your – I don't know if you have the list of the 17 draft up. Because I want to ask you. Do you remember who the number 2 pick was in that draft?
Yeah, Lonzo Ball.
It's funny. I forget that. I always have to look it up.
Because he was sort of locked in there because everybody was like, they liked Fultz. But if you remember, you go back to that time, he was playing for Washington and they missed the tournament. And you're like, all right, how good is this guy if he missed the tournament? But people really liked him. They're like, oh, he can do a lot of things, like a big point guard, all this other stuff. And then Lonzo Ball sitting there for the Lakers at 2 seemed like the obvious pick. And then Danny Ainge gets the guy he wants with Tatum.
I mean, you think I'm being a little hyperbolous in terms of the Philly move,
a bit
from the Danny Ainge end,
savvy.
It's one of the more brilliant moves in NBA trade history. So I'm looking at that draft now, and you got Donovan Mitchell. Right after Mitchell was Bam Adebayo. Kind of forget that he was on the board as well.
Yeah, so I think I would say Mitchell, Tatum, Bam Adebayo, and then to like the next level down would be like John Collins.
Do you go Kuzma maybe?
De'Aaron Fox, actually. I'll go De'Aaron Fox.
Is a hit, yep.
But, I mean, there's a lot of guys. If you redrafted it, Markelle Fultz might be a first-round pick.
Might be.
Well, just because, I mean, there's a lot of guys that just were like, you know, whiffs, and some guys didn't even play. Now, a worse pick was actually made by a friend of the show, Ryan McDonough, Josh Jackson with Phoenix.
That did not work out.
And he was the guy that I know a lot of Celtics fans were in on because that was in – those are the guys we were all looking at. Like, he was definitely going to be a top five pick, but he is sucked out loud.
Would it be Tatum and Mitchell in a redraft for the number one pick?
Yeah, I think so. And then, I mean, I guess it depends on how you view Adebayo from Miami, but he would probably be third for me. I'd probably go Mitchell, Tatum.
Basketball reference, there have been 3 All-Stars out of that draft, and we mentioned them all, Adebayo, Mitchell, and Tatum. Yeah. Pretty crazy stuff. But I still contend, man. Like, around here, Keith.
No, that was big. You're right.
If the roles were reversed and Danny Ainge traded up to draft Markelle Fultz with the number one pick, we would never let that guy hear the end of it ever.
No, I know. That was pretty significant. I gotcha. But what did they even get, though? So they let me pull this up. The Celtics
didn't
traded...
they get an extra first-round pick, I thought, maybe?
Yep. Romeo Langford. So, no, you're right. They got an extra first-round pick, but it's not like they got...
It's not like a cryptid.
Yeah, it's not like the Nets deal where they got Tatum and Brown for it.
No.
That's another good one.
That's amazing.
Script.
What if the Patriots traded for Stephon Diggs?
So this was the guy I was pushing for a while. Go ahead.
We'd pass out. Sorry.
We would. So just, again, so March of 2020, they – but, again, there was rumors prior to that, right? Like, there was definitely the thought that Steph Diggs was unhappy in Minnesota – and maybe could have gone somewhere else. Like, again, last year, he unfortunately would have been wasted. But if they traded for him earlier, or maybe they convinced Tom Brady to stay, because I feel like the timing, wasn't it like Brady signed with Tampa, and then he got traded to the Bills. And it was a first-round pick, a fourth, a fifth, and a sixth for Steph Diggs, and a seventh. So... first of all, the Bills aren't as good. And last year, they probably don't win the division. Well, I take it back. They might still win the division, but they're not nearly as good. They probably don't go to the conference championship game because that was what kind of unlocked Josh Allen into being a really, really good quarterback, was having a true number one receiver. Diggs was maybe the best wideout in football last year.
He was great and has matched up perfectly with Josh Allen. I'm trying to look to see. Did Justin Jefferson get drafted with that pick? I'm like feverishly trying to. Oh my
yes,
God!
Yes, you
so,
are.
It was
22 overall, Justin Jefferson.
So they traded away Diggs and then took the Buffalo pick and got Justin Jefferson, which is kind of crazy when you think about it.
They replaced him immediately. Jefferson had the best rookie year of all time, and Shime's telling me that trade went down 3 days before Tom Brady officially signed with Tampa. So in other words, could that have kept Brady here? I think the damage was already done.
Yeah, I agree.
That would have been a little too late. But again, it would have really impacted the Bills, because then, like, who are they throwing to?
No one.
Well, the damage is done, my friend.
Yeah, it would have been.
Maybe they drafted Justin Jefferson, you know, but then again, you know, you went and acquired the player. I think the thing about Stephon Diggs that has impressed me is that he doesn't, now again, it's the whole you reserve the right to change your mind because these wide receivers might show themselves a little bit. He does not appear to be, like, I know he won it out of Minnesota and looked a little whiny, but ever since being in Buffalo, he's done the dirty work, he's busted his ass, he's been a good teammate. Like, there's a lot to like about Steph Diggs.
Yeah.
That seems to fit that organization and what they want to do, where it makes me think he could have fit here. But, I mean,
yeah, because think about where Josh Allen was at before Diggs got there. And I mean that from the perspective of Diggs being like, all right, I'm going to a guy that is still a work in progress. And I remember thinking, I'm like, this won't work. I'm like, if Diggs doesn't want to play for Kirk Cousins, he's going to be pissed at Allen. But something clicked. He led the league in – he had 127 grabs last year for over 1,500 yards. So his pace isn't as strong this year, but he's still going to be over 1,000 yards. He's going to be at a bunch of catches. He already has 7 touchdowns, so he could set a career high, which was 9 from 2018. So he's just another solid Pro Bowl / All-Pro wide receiver.
But I do wonder if Josh Allen really needing to be a part of that Buffalo running game – combined with it's Steph Diggs and who after that. Like, you know, Monday night, I don't think we're going to be doing our abbreviated version of NFL Sunday before the Patriots-Bills game here on the WEI Sports Radio Network being like, well, Dawson Knox is going to go all Gronk and catch 10 for 150 and 2 touchdowns. It does make me wonder if they're so invested in both of those guys that after the great year last year, people are like, okay, I'm not really worried about the other dudes. I'm going to make sure to try to take away the run from Allen and sort of double up on Diggs or put a J.C. Jackson on him and hopefully you hold him to 6 for 80 and no touchdowns.
Yeah, because looking at that offense, you wonder, all right, they don't run the ball all that well. Emmanuel Sanders is fine. Cole Beasley's fine. Dawson Knox is having a good year. But you're like, if Josh Allen and Steph Diggs don't have a good game on Monday, like how do they score a bunch of points?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe they got too dug in on that one. By the way, tomorrow in this time, you will be hearing us talk to Andrew Raycroft of the Boston Bruins. And we did touch on the Bo Jackson. So there we go. There is your What If Wednesday here with Gresh and Keefe on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. Chapman, to see the latest with Mac Jones, Keith.
What's going on with Mac Jones? Actually, I've seen a couple of things with Mac Jones, now that you mention it.
Well, there's one where apparently in Atlanta – there was a guy who went on the Twitter who ended up saying that he somehow got into the Patriots locker room post-game in Atlanta.
Oh, my God. Here we go again.
Well, yeah.
Where did that happen to Brady's jersey that one time?
It did. Yeah. So someone named the Spike King at Spike King 76, right?
Okay.
To go further into this, talking about some of the stuff that might have been taken out of the locker room, including Jarrett Stidham's socks.
And worthless. They were absolutely worthless.
And they were put on Twitter. And the story I'm reading here is that the thieves didn't stop with taking stuff from Mac. They went as far to take a pair of Jarrett Stidham's socks, which they then sold in what was likely the least valuable sale of game-worn memorabilia in history.
Stidham socks
wasn't supposedly
he, wasn't he inactive I don't even think they were game worn.
What do we have gone out for warm-ups maybe or something like that,
then,
I don't know I
assume they just took them because they fit. They're like, oh, these are the same size socks I use, so I'll just wear these.
But apparently this Twitter handle, the tweeter, says they got Mac Jones's playbook wristband that was snatched along with an unsuspecting pair of socks. And apparently these thieves, we'll call them, are getting ready to hit again because Tom Brady and Tampa Bay are going to be in Atlanta. I think that might be their game this week.
Interesting. So you hope it's not Buffalo, or somebody associated with Buffalo if they have Mac Jones's wristband play calls. Like, that'd be a problem. You got to come up with all new calls, all new signals now if that's out there.
And it's funny because there's no picture of it. Like, they put the picture of Stidham socks out there, you don't put the picture of what the real money would or what would bring you real money.
But who's buying that? Like, who's going to say, oh, you got Mac Jones's clearly stolen piece of memorabilia? Like, that's not one that they can, like, give you the authentic seal on it. They're like, yeah, that's stolen. You need to give that back.
Who's buying that? I would say this. Chris Scheim or John Anderson, if you were gifted Mac Jones' wristband, like, say somehow Kiefer, I got my hands on it, right?
What do you think Scheim would do with that?
No, are you kidding me? It'd be a piece of NFL memorabilia tied into a quarterback he's completely wrong about. Why wouldn't we want
to
get it?
Yeah, I'd sell him on eBay to the highest bidder.
Oh, you wouldn't keep it as some sort of keepsake of your time in the exciting radio business?
I do see a picture of the wristband, by the way.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Yeah, just give it a bing.
It's interesting, to say the least. And Stidham socks is the one that really cracks me up. By the way, for those who don't remember, it was a credentialed media member from Mexico who was the one stole that Brady jersey. I mean, what are we doing here? And by the way, has security gone that have we gone that far backwards in security measures?
No, see, I thought it was the other way. Like the other way, especially now with COVID, like you got to be wearing masks at the facility, you got to be vaccinated at most of these facilities. Like I thought
they would have been easier?
No. I'm saying I thought it would have been tougher than a couple years ago. Cuz you're right, it was definitely trending in the more security direction and I thought this year would be even more difficult for it, but I don't know, they found a way.
I thought you were going down the road of, well, they're wearing a mask so they can get away with this stuff now because it's harder to identify.
That does help. So my biggest pet peeve, there was a movie that came out at the beginning of the year. It was a terrible movie with Anne Hathaway called Locked Down.
You said Anne Hathaway hooked me in as a bad movie.
So the whole premise was they were going to like steal from their own company or whatever.
Right.
So it's during COVID, which was already kind of off-putting because like you didn't want to watch a movie about COVID. But so they're wearing masks like during the movie. Then they break into the building in which they're going to steal stuff from. They take their masks off.
What?
Like you already have masks on. And probably because the director was like, we got to see Anne Hathaway's face. But you're like, yeah, but it doesn't make any sense. So anyway, that's really rubbed me the wrong way. And it's the worst movie of the year.
So it is a real life Nick Gage, as we talked about on Dark Side of the Ring, the guy who's the hardcore wrestler who served 7 years in prison.
Correct.
He's known for wearing a mask to the ring. Doesn't wear it when he robbed a bank.
Yep. That's exactly what this was. Maybe it was inspired by him.
People are people. Mm-hmm. Coming up, a guy who some say should wear a mask, Rob Bradford of WEI.com. No, I'm only kidding, for crying out loud. Brad Foe will talk baseball with us. I'm sure he'll be wearing his best PJs. Mm-hmm. We'll talk to Brad Foe next. But right now, a guy who sleeps nude, Scheim, ready to trend. In what might be his last baseball conversation for a while, joining us on the Harbor One hotline here at 11:31 with Gresh and Keefe on the WEEI Sports Radio Network, WEEI.com's Rob Bradford. Bradfo, I know that most of us were in the, they're never going to figure this out and we're going to have a lockout and all that. Are you officially in mourning today?
No, because I saw this coming a mile away. Are you kidding me? I mean, who didn't see this coming? And by the way, it's going to be a pleasure talking to you guys in July next time we talk.
Yeah, we're all taking stabs at when they're going to start. I think July 4th has a nice ring to it.
Yeah, we'll be doing a remote from somewhere to celebrate opening day, just like a couple of years ago. But it's the thing that I can't get past is the sting from what they went through in the pandemic, you know, in 2020. And that wasn't even a lockout. That was just them bickering about stuff. That was just them arguing. And if you hear what's going on now down in Texas, and obviously it runs out tonight, the CBA runs out tonight, it sounds like they're having these half-hour meetings. You know, it's not like they're burning the midnight oil, getting ready to, like, stop this whole thing. And the only hope is that they come out of today and they say, okay, we're going to push it back a few days. We saw some wiggle room. I don't think the words wiggle room are going to be mentioned at all in the next 24 hours.
Is there a main sticking point? Like, do they just disagree on everything, or is there like one thing specifically that is holding everything up?
Well, I think they disagree on everything, yep. Number one. But and even if they did agree, they probably would disagree that they agreed or agree they disagreed. So it's, I think it's the biggest thing is the amount of money that they're spending. Like this is the biggest sticking point, I think, in the eyes of a lot of people, which is baseball. You have a lot of teams, and we saw J.D. Martinez say this a couple of years ago, and he's getting it from Scott Boras, and other people are saying it, that only about 20% of the teams are actually trying. And it's hard to argue that at least 50% of the teams aren't trying. I mean, are you kidding me? The payrolls that some of these teams have, and then you see the attendance they have because of the payrolls, they aren't trying. And the problem is that you have had some situations like Tampa where they can say they can sell to their ownership, or they can sell to or try to sell to their fan base. Oh, look it, they did it this way and they won. Well, you know what? That's never going to be sustainable. I think the Rays are an outlier. You know, the Oakland A's might be a little bit of an outlier, but good luck to the Marlins, to the Pirates, to the Orioles. It doesn't work. It's somewhere along the lines you have to spend some money.
Rob Bradford at WEEI.com here with Gresh and Keefe talking about the impending doom for Major League Baseball. Rob, look, a lot of it comes down to money, but there are also other issues that they need to work out in the game. And Keefe and I have kind of talked about this a little bit, but I'm curious for your thoughts. Are we going to get a universal DH in both leagues?
Well, obviously you should, and I think that that's one thing that you might get. But the fact is that they've backtracked on things that they've actually done and worked, and people like them. And they say, yeah, you know what? We know that people like them, but we're not going to do them anyway. You know, whether it was the extra inning rule, whether it was, you know, the universal DH, things like that. So all of it. Like, there's a lot of things that they have dabbled in that worked, and they've gone the other way. Now, I do think the DH might be one thing where they say, okay, you know, we knew this was coming. We knew that this is going to have to be something. And by the way, the players, including a certain player on the Boston Red Sox, is going to be jumping for joy when this happens. And I don't know, like, of course they should have a universal DH. It's dumb to watch pitchers hit. It's stupid. And so I think that's one thing that they'll get. But there's a lot of little things which, you know, you're like, oh, man, why don't you just do them? Pitch clock obviously jumps up there.
I think there should be pitchers hitting in both leagues myself. Yeah. I think the National League game is faster than the American League game.
You're a purist.
And it'll make a few guys, I don't know, take a couple of hacks. You're a pro player. You're only pitching three innings anyway, so you might as well take a few hacks.
I tell you what, I said to, you know, I would say to my kids, hey, you know, I'm not going to watch a game, but when Eduardo Rodriguez gets to bat, yeah, you know, in this interleague game, you know, summon me.
Because all the catchers and second basemen around the league are great hitters too.
Well, that's a good point. You know, but they're all my. Do you really want to go there? The discrepancy in terms of the pitchers. I mean, the pitchers when
Shohei Ohtani is a pretty good hitter.
He certainly is. Yes, he certainly is.
A nice little hitter out there.
It's amazing how many Shohei Ohtanis there are.
But if you want to speed up the game, and they're not going to go to pitch clock. They're not going to do all these other things. They're certainly not going to go to seven inning games. They're not going to do all this. So the National League game is quicker than the American League game.
You want to speed up the game. Yeah. This is the reason, the way that you want to speed up the game.
One of the
reasons. Okay, hey you, human being who just happened to be a pitcher, yeah, get up in the batter's box. Don't take the bat off your shoulder. Basically, give an automatic out. Okay, swing
take a hack.
Swing and miss.
So why are pitchers, they literally can't hit? Like high school, no, college, like these guys do both. They're great. Every single Legion team, that the best hitter is the best pitcher. Then they get to the majors and they just forget how to hit. Learn how to hit.
It's life's great lesson. We have to be reminded of reality every once in a while. And that reality is that for all the high school stars who say, I could do exactly what he's doing, no, you can't. And I mean, you just can't.
They don't even let the pitchers pitch anymore, let alone.
Well, that's fair.
That is the biggest issue. Speaking of pitchers, Michael Wacha and James Paxton.
Ooh, yeah, spicy. Here we go.
They bring those guys in. So I guess, well, I want your answer on those guys who are whatever. They're like Perez and Richards, I suppose. But
feeling
is
sexy.
The reason why the Red Sox aren't spending any money this offseason so that they can retain Bogaerts and Devers, or is there a scenario where they just aren't players in free agency, and they let those guys go.
I think it's all, you know, different teams are viewing it different ways. The way that somebody had told me when classifying the Red Sox is that they're going to jump in the second wave. Now, I said, oh, the second wave? You mean in April? So it's but I get it. You know, like, okay, you think maybe there'll be bargains or who knows, that you'll be able to get the guys you want and you don't have to rush, even though, like, everybody's rushing now and trying to lock these guys up before tonight. But I just think that with the Red Sox, you know, the walking Paxton thing, I get it, but it drives me nuts. It just drives me nuts because people, the way that teams are acquiring players now, they are not looking at what a guy has done almost at all. Like, the percentage of what they're looking at of what they've done has become like basically 30-70. In other words, okay, 30% of what you've done, but 70% is what we think you're going to do because we see that analytics. We're going to tweak this or tweak that. Michael Wacha is the perfect example. The guy doubled his salary with an ERA over 5.
Yeah.
I mean, in James Paxton, like, hey, listen, this could work out for them. It's actually a good contract, I think, and with the options overall. But still, if you want to talk about how much money is being thrown away, thrown around, not away.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but,
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. but just look at James Paxton. You're paying the guy $10 million to pitch at best 3 months. At best. So it's, you know, that's crazy to me. So anyway, it's so much about what they think guys are going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been going that way for a while. But I think the Wacha thing was a perfect example of this. It's more like that more than ever.
Rob Bradford, who runs WEEI.com with Gresham Keefe. He's with us on the Harbor One Hotline talking about everything Major League Baseball. Rob, I'd mentioned to Rich earlier that the old deadline spur action. Are we really going to see any movement from either side in this negotiation on a new collective bargaining agreement before spring training looms? Or will the need for, hey, guess what, we're in the middle of February, normally this is when we would be reporting, is that when maybe business would pick up, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, people in baseball, some people in baseball I talk to, they're optimistic that this isn't going to be a long thing. And okay, you know, sure, you can be optimistic about it, but I'll say it again. I'm sorry. Like, I am just, like, stung by what we've seen over the last couple of years, including in 2020. And you're right. When you get to spring training, that's when maybe they try a little harder and maybe there's a little more desperation. And let's hope so, because once you get into spring training, everyone just accepted this was going to happen right now. It is what it is. And by the way, suddenly it's become the best offseason like ever, or at least in recent memory, because this is what they should do every year. They should put a deadline on signing guys, just like the other leagues do. And this is the byproduct of it. We have interest in baseball at a time where you normally wouldn't have interest in baseball. But I think that as it goes on, that interest is going to fade pretty quick.
Do you think with the Corey Seager signing and some of the others that Xander Bogaerts looks at it and says, well, I'm a $30 million a year shortstop, and do you think the Red Sox think he is a $30 million a year player?
Xander Bogaerts, anyone who doesn't think he's opting out is nuts. I mean, he's you know, go back to the conversation I had with him in June. And he said, you know, hey, listen, the contract that I signed before with different circumstances, we won the World Series, I was a different player, I'm a better player right now. And by the way, all these guys are getting paid $30 million a year. The situation has changed. He said that in June. He was waiting to see what these contracts were. The contracts are exactly, for the shortstops, exactly what we thought they might be. And so, okay, Xander Bogaerts, he's not going to opt out, and he's going to take for the next 4 years $20 million a year instead of $30 million a year? No, it's not going to happen. And that's where it gets uncomfortable for the Red Sox because, you know, if I think they want to prioritize Devers. I do. I think they want to prioritize Devers if you're talking about extensions. But still, in their perfect world, they would get both.
And you already have Bogaerts in the Hall of Fame, Rob, so I know how you feel.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there's two things I know to be true. Number one, Xander Bogaerts is a Hall of Famer. Number two, pitchers shouldn't hit. Mm-hmm. But I do, by the way, I do have my first Hall of Fame vote, much to the dismay of Christian Fourier.
Where do you stand on Manny, Ortiz, and Schilling?
Spoiler alert, I'm voting for all of them.
Oh, good man, Rob. Yeah, good
I mean, I don't know if you want to go down this road, but I'll just say this, is that am I comfortable doing it? No, I'm not. But how it's hypocritical if you don't. Like,
yeah.
So, you know, my tale of woe about getting this Hall of Fame vote is I'm not going to go into it, but I finally got the vote. And why I'm looking at these people giving blank ballots and then voting for guys and then not voting for guys or saying that, hey, you know what? I'm gonna not vote for the guy till the third time he's on the ballot.
So dumb.
Like, it's so dumb. It's so dumb. And so how can we be hypocritical about these guys? Because, sure, yeah, we know that a lot of them took steroids and performance-enhancing drugs. But we, you know what we don't know? Who didn't? I mean, who was taking it and we don't know about?
Right.
And there was a ton of them, including probably some who are in the Hall of Fame.
Well, Rob, you now, with those comments, have no chance of ever being the president of the BBWAA.
Oh, I have been on my – so they do not like me. I can tell you what, when we got in, and I don't like most of them either. So, I went back. I got kicked out.
This, Rob.
I got kicked out in 2000 when I went to WEI after Boston Herald. I got kicked out because I went to something called the Internet, right? And so I got kicked out for that 1 year, and I had like an old curmudgeon stand up in the middle of the room of the meeting and said, "We can't let a radio station website person in the Baseball Writers Association." Okay, so I didn't even want to get back in. You know why I got back in? Because they give you a pass where you don't have to apply to for a credential when you go on the road. I wanted that pass. That's it. So finally, you have to be in 10 consecutive years. Alex Speer and myself, here we are, 10 consecutive years. Thank you for the vote. And can I tell a quick story real quick? My wife, when I got the ballot, you're going to have no choice. I'm going to tell it anyway. My wife, I got the ballot in the mail, and I'm like, oh, look, I got this. I get a Hall of Fame. I can vote. And she was so excited. I've never seen my wife so excited in her life. She thought I was inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Well, maybe next year.
The WEEI.com Hall of Fame awaits for Rob Bradford, who runs WEEI.com.
Membership of one.
Right, good to know the BBWAA card is like TSA pre-check. Rob,
thank you. Yes, there you go. All right, thank you.
We'll see you, Rob. Thanks so much. There goes Brad Foe. Your fantasy football stayaways are next.
He's gonna give you what you need to know. Talk about who you gotta start, who you gotta sit, gotta let go. When you be like, whoop, whoop, you doing so good, gonna win your league. But you gotta listen to Rich Keefe.
And Chime Time.
In the fantasy breeze. Rich Keefe is playing like John Clayton up inside the huddle. And he's got an intimate knowledge of the fantasy game. Like he and Matthew Berry like to cuddle. If your team got a problem, yo, he'll solve it. Winston Wolfe for this fantasy gauntlet. So pretty pleased with sugar on it. Check out the hook walk.
Chime.
He's gonna give you the info you desire. Who to claim from the waiver wire. So your lineup game is on fire. Put him on the board. Championship. You're definitely gonna win your league. But you gotta listen to Rich Keefe.
And Chime Time.
Fin the fantasy.
Brief. My fantasy team is 1-4. Jeez.
Whether it's daily fantasy or weekly fantasy, we here at Gresham Keefe feel that it is our duty during football season to be able to help you to win as much fantasy as possible. Right now, it is time for the fantasy stayaways. Keith, what do we got?
That's right. We got week 13 in the NFL, or in fantasy, the penultimate week of the regular season. Browns, Packers, Titans, Panthers are on the bye, so some of these stayaways you may be forced to play, but these are guys that we don't like, certainly in daily, but in yearly as well, to stay away from. Shine, let me start. I have this guy, played him, he was good, got hurt, came back, he's been bad. And I'm going to stay away from Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, to me, is still hurt. He came back probably too early from these fingers and hand injury that he's dealing with. They were talking on the broadcast about it. He can't even really, like, feel the ball anymore. He's a mess. His first two games back, he did not have a touchdown pass against Green Bay and Arizona and was terrible. last week against Washington. He did have two touchdown passes. One of them was sort of a drive at the end as they're moving down. But football team has one of the worst defenses in the league. So he probably should have done even a little bit better than he did. And it was ugly. Like, the final numbers don't even really show you how bad that Seattle offense is right now. And they are playing San Francisco this week, who are trending up a little bit. So I'm staying away from Russell Wilson.
So, Keith, quickly, Russell Wilson is turning into David Price. He, too, is fingers tingleman.
He is a little bit. Although I think he had a legit injury.
I also think he's just out of sync as well. Like you saw in the two-point conversion play.
Oh, he's off.
DK Metcalf wide open in the back right corner of the end zone, and Wilson's eyes were locked in the middle of the field.
By the way, if I have a better option, and I bet you do, I'm staying away from DK Metcalf as well. So there may be a little bit of an urge to really get him involved because he didn't get a target till the fourth quarter last week. Mm-hmm. But still, there's just something off with that offense, and I would want to stay away altogether.
My first stay away is a guy who I've mentioned before in the last couple weeks, actually. That's Cortland Sutton for the Denver Broncos. This guy just isn't getting targets. He's gotten 2, 3, and 2 targets the last 3 weeks. He's only caught, what, 2 passes in 2 of those games, oof, 1 pass in another game. This guy hasn't had a double-digit week since week 6. Like, Cortland Sutton is not getting anything in this offense because they just don't pass a lot. They want to run the football. They want to play defense. Their quarterback is Teddy Bridgewater. If their quarterback was Aaron Rodgers, that might be different. But right now, Teddy Bridgewater is just targeting Jerry Jeudy up the wazoo and running the football, and that's how it's going to be. So I'm staying away from Cortland Sutton all over the place.
I'm going to go to Monday Night Football in that Patriots game. I'm staying away from Dawson Knox of the Buffalo Bills, who's had a really good year. He's been one of the better tight ends in football, but the Patriots have snuffed out tight ends all year long. They've only allowed 3 touchdowns to tight ends. In those 3 games, Houston, Dallas, and Cleveland are the only 3 games that they have given up double-digit points to tight ends. And that's not even just one tight end. That's the entire tight end position. Even in a PPR league, they have not gotten double-digit points. So they've done a really good job all year, last couple of weeks. Just about nothing going. So Dawson Knox has a tough matchup. Normally I would play him, but this week I'm going to look for another option.
I'm going to stay in that same game. I'm actually going to take a Patriots receiver that I'm going to stay away, and it's going to be Jacoby Myers. He's been pretty consistent all year, like we've talked about. He's the most targeted Patriot on the team because he just gets open and catches the football. He doesn't make any explosive plays. He doesn't catch many touchdowns.
He does have 1 touchdown.
He does have
to get off his back about
not from Mac Jones, but he has a touchdown. But I'm staying away from Jacoby Myers this week against a good Bills pass defense. So I'm out on Myers.
There you go.
That's it. There we go.
I got one more
for you.
You do have one more.
Personality
stay away for you.
Wait a minute.
I'm taking a whole different turn here. Screw the numbers.
Personality?
This is a gut call. We are staying away from Chase Claypool. This is now the 3rd time he's in fantasy stayaways, and I'll tell you why. Because he said, guys, we need to have music at practice to make practice more fun. Cam Hayward, the defensive lineman for the Steelers, came out and blew him a new one. And then Mike Tomlin said, you go catch footballs, I'll worry about practice.
Yeah.
Everybody's against Chase Claypool. This could be a punishment week for him, so I am staying away from Chase Claypool.
Good one.
How about Tomlin, who had a very visceral reaction to that suggestion as well? Mm-hmm. I'm liking Mike Tomlin more and more by the day. There are your fantasy stayaways. The Bruins are a mess. The Sox ain't really spending. And, of course, we got a football game to look forward to on Monday night. That's next.